Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. All this week, Radio Boston is looking at different ways the September 11th attacks have affected the Boston area.
One process that became a lot more complicated over the last 10 years is U.S. immigration. Thousands of foreign students and intellectuals come to our city's colleges and businesses annually, particularly here in Boston. And getting here became much more involved and complicated after 9/11.
International students alone contribute $18.78 billion annually to the nation's economy, $1.2 billion of that just here in Massachusetts. Now, Boston University hosts more international students than any school in New England, more than 5,000 from 139 different countries.
At the beginning of each semester, they all have to pass through BU's International Student and Scholars Office.
So first week in September, got to be a busy time in this office.
It is. It's a really exciting time.
Jean Kelly is the director here. She's been working with international students at BU for more than 18 years. So what are these kids here to do?
Well, they're here to check in with us. We take a look at their passport and their immigration documents.
They're all very intently filling out forms.
They are. They are.
I don't want to disturb them. So were you in the office on the day of 9/11?
I was.
Was there any anxiety among the students that you work with?
There's a great deal of anxiety, a great deal of concern for safety, and just wanting to know that they were going to be able to stay here and continue their studies. We communicated very closely with students from Middle Eastern countries and predominantly Muslim countries. We did have a few students that decided to go home for the fall semester at that time because their family members wanted them to go home.
Okay, so tell me about how things started to change in the days after.
Well, there were a lot of rather drastic changes immediately after 9/11. The embassies sort of went in shutdown mode. They made the visa application process quite complicated. They put a lot of extra security measures at the port of entry. They did some really quick sort of reactive measures to try to make sure that people are coming to the U.S. for the right reasons. Things have settled down since then in the sense that we have a new system that we work in that was put into place in 2003. The system is called SEVIS, which stands for the Student Exchange Visitor Information System, and it's an online database that all schools and colleges are required to use to create records on behalf of international students and scholars, update records, monitor their academic progress and their information, personal information and academic information while they're here. That information is now available to consulates and embassies worldwide and to port of entries when they are making evaluations at the airports and customs.
So how laborious is all of this?
It's a great deal of work. It's very detailed information within very, very short reporting time frames. So it's much more data analysis and much more record keeping and record maintenance than ever before.
The students have to check in with your office and go through this every year that they're here?
They check in each semester, so each fall and spring semester, for the duration of their programs.
I wonder, do you feel like this is at all excessive, what you do?
I think international students are in some ways disproportionately checked and monitored in that the international student population that enters through U.S. ports of entry every year is a very small percentage of the total number of people coming into the country each year. It's approximately 3% of the total population coming in. There's a lot of information that's available in the system for these students, but there's not as much information for that other 97% of people coming into the country each year.
Yeah, so maybe is the government just kind of so closely tracking international students because they're so easily trackable?
Well, I think they look at educational institutions as a partner to try to work together to gather the information that they want to have on students. And I think that the Department of Homeland Security is looking at other opportunities to try to partner with other agencies and other organizations to try to track other folks in different ways.
That's Jean Kelly, director of Boston University's International Student and Scholars Office. Not everyone who has dealt with immigration in the post-9/11 world is as sanguine. Richard Iandoli is an immigration lawyer in Charlestown specializing in the H-1B visa. That's the visa that allows skilled workers to come into the United States. People like doctors, scientists, educators.
If a worker is abroad waiting to come in, the security clearances got very, very backlogged, particularly in some countries like Iran or China, Syria. The security clearances have not cleared quickly so that you'd have faculty members who were supposed to start teaching in the fall of the year, and they might miss the first semester of their appointment at one of the universities. Some of that's been cleared up, and now some of it's actually been getting slower and more inefficient in the past year, maybe year and a half.
So say I'm a scientist who is from a Middle Eastern country. What is my process going to be like if I'm hired by, you know, a hospital in Boston?
Let's say you just finished a PhD at one of the local universities, and now one of the teaching hospitals wants to hire you. The hospital files a petition in which they have to prove a whole series of things to the Immigration Service about the need for the scientist, the degree and experience requirements, the pay that they'll be paying. They have to file certain notices with the U.S. Department of Labor, a lot of a number of internal filings and public access documents, et cetera. So a ton of paperwork. And then that authorizes them to file the petition with CIS, one of the three agencies that was created after 9/11. It's called Citizenship and Immigration Services. They collect fees, which now average around $2,000 to $3,000 per person. And that's going to, if you don't pay extra money to speed it up, that's going to take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. If the scientist is abroad, then all that happens first here by the employer, and then immigration sends the approval to the American consulate in the country where the person is living, usually the home country. And then the individual goes through security clearances through the U.S. Department of State. That had been very, very bad for the first several years after 9/11. It's gotten better, but you'll often find scientists who are now waiting again 90 to 180 days for clearances through consuls. And it's not clear that they're being upheld up because of good security work or just that the bureaucracy isn't able to handle the volume.
Do you see employers just giving up on potential employees because they don't want to deal with the hassle?
Yeah, not so much the universities and the hospitals and the research houses, because at this point, I believe the statistics are that in math, science, technology, and engineering, the PhD candidates, whether they graduate with a PhD in the U.S. or come from abroad, over 50% are foreign nationals. So if there's one local university that hasn't had an American graduate with a PhD in physics in a number of years, even though they've offered full scholarships. So if it's in those areas where there are shortages or where the supply is totally dominated by the need for international, you know, the best and the brightest, then they're not going to back off. But many, many other smaller organizations have backed off. And part of this is the economy. The economy is so bad that people aren't hiring anyways. So of the 65,000 H-1B numbers available this year, only 20,000 have been used. So in 5 months, whereas several years running, those numbers were gone in days or at most a month.
Well, last question. Obviously, Mr. Iandoli, you're getting a lot of business out of all of this, but if you could wave your magic wand to reform the system, essentially, what would you do?
There needs to be a recognition again, as there was when Senator Kennedy worked on this for many years, that the benefit from the H-1B workers is enormous. The multiplier effect by virtually every economic study is that 3 to 5 jobs are created for every H-1B employee every year. So I think it would be to recognize that it's not something that needs to be penalized and delayed and controlled as much. It's really a benefit to the United States.
Mr. Iandoli, thank you very much.
Great. Nice talking with you.
Richard Iandoli is an immigration attorney in Charlestown.
Well, up next, a new look at the challenge of teaching religion in an increasingly secular world. That's today's Talker. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.